However, apart from the Chancellor's official position, there is a very different cast to the speeches by other cabinet members before the huge refugee rallies. These revisionist overtones have not contributed toward dispelling the fears in the eastern capitals of a revengeful pan-Germanism. Let me just stress that point again, because this is a key one. We're talking about the Cold War. We're talking a shooting war in Europe that went on right up until 1952. We're talking about the basic American story has always been, well, the rotten Russians came in, they took eastern Europe, they held on to it, they put all those people into slavery. It was just crazy. It was just territorial aggression. Well, what we're looking at here is are key and prominent members of the almost completely rebuilt German hierarchy, economically rebuilt by the West, people of Nazi pedigree put into positions of power, going out to rallies of thousands and thousands of screaming Germans and talking about liberation of an area including Warsaw, Prague, and Vienna. As the author says in his more subtle way, perhaps, than I have said, I'll reread it. These revisionist overtones have not contributed toward dispelling the fears in the eastern capitals of a revengeful pan-Germanism. Going on, being aware of the deep distrust in Warsaw and Prague, the Expelle leaders now speak quite diplomatically of the people's, quote, right to a homeland. They also claim the, quote, right to self-determination, as advocated by Woodrow Wilson in 1917. This, however, is viewed in the eastern capitals as a legalistic veil to cover up the old aggressive plans. Each year in the spring or early summer, the Sudeten Germans and the Expellés from Silesia, East Prussia, and Pomerania come together in rallies 200,000 to 500,000 strong, organized in the best Hitler tradition. Quote, it has become customary, wrote the New York Herald Tribune correspondent Gaston Koblenz, that a minister of the Adenauer government addresses each of the larger meetings and gives assurances that the cause is never being forgotten. According to the Tribune report, Dr. Adenauer, at a meeting of 250,000 refugees from Silesia, praised the Silesians for, quote, keeping alive the memory of their homeland. At another meeting, before 500,000 Sudeten Germans at Munich, Transport Minister Hans Christian Seebohm suggested that, quote, not only the Sudeten, but also Bohemia and Moravia, which form a large part of Czechoslovakia, should be linked to Germany in the future. Cabinet Minister Theodor Oberländer once declared that the reconquest of the European East is, quote, a German and European task.
So keep in mind that the New Germany, unquote, is advocating the liberation of a territory up to the Urals, Warsaw, Vienna, Prague. As someone once said, the song was over, but the melody lingered on. Now, it's worth noting also that the inclusion of, inclusion is perhaps the wrong word, the ascension of top Nazis to positions of great post-war power is by no means something that ended in the 50s, that it continued for a long, long time. Returning again to the book The Bormann Brotherhood by former British intelligence agent and now Canadian journalist William Stevenson. Did Globke help Bormann's friends? He certainly made life easier for Schacht. That's a former Nazi finance minister, Hjalmar Horace Greeley Schacht, who had many dealings with Western industrialists, as we've seen. Beginning again, did Globke help Bormann's friends? He certainly made life easier for Schacht. His resignation under communist pressure was window dressing to quell the anger of Western liberals. 5 years later, in September 1968, a dinner was given in his honor by President Heinrich Lübke, L-U-B-K-E, accompanied by Chancellor Kurt Kiesinger, K-I-E-S-I-N-G-E-R. The president, the chancellor, and the former state secretary thus publicly thumbed their noses at the verdict of history. In the old days, Heinrich Lübke approved the blueprints for death camps. Kiesinger supervised Nazi radio propaganda. So here we have not only the chancellor, but the president, respectively, in charge of Nazi radio propaganda and approving the blueprints for the death camps.
All right. And lest you think that that this other stuff ends back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, another example came up rather recently in the San Jose Mercury News for Thursday, April 23rd, 1981. I'm going to read the article, and then I'll explain it a little bit for those of you not familiar.
Actually, wasn't that in the San Jose News, the evening edition of the Mercury? Now it's called the evening edition of Mercury. Then it used to be the San Jose News, if you want to go look that up in a library.
Indeed. For April 23rd, 1981. The headline of this short, small article is Court closes case in Reichstag fire. Dateline Berlin. It's an AP Wire story. The West Berlin Supreme Court has closed the book on the 48-year-old case of a Dutch communist convicted and executed for starting the Reichstag fire in 1933 that helped propel Adolf Hitler to absolute power. The court threw out a lower court decision that had overturned the original Nazi conviction of Marnus van der Lubbe and ruled there could be no further litigation in the matter. Van der Lubbe's brother has been trying to have the conviction erased since 1955. Let me just give you that one sentence again. The court threw out a lower court decision that had overturned the original Nazi conviction of Martinus van der Lubbe and ruled there could be no further litigation in the matter. Sort of like sealing the transcripts for 100 years type of a thing.
Recall that the Reichstag fire was a provocation set up by the Nazis in order to achieve the total dictatorial powers that they desired, and in order to achieve those powers, they blamed the Reichstag fire on the communists, and they produced a former member of the Dutch Communist Party, the aforementioned Martinus van der Lubbe, who was legally blind and legally insane, and they had him wandering around in the general vicinity of the burning Reichstag with matches and gasoline. Keep in mind that the Reichstag adjoined a tunnel which was connected to Reichsmarshal Hermann Göring, later head of the Luftwaffe's house, which just happened to be next door to the Reichstag fire. He appears on the steps of the Reichstag announcing, "Look, the commies burned down..." The Reichstag was the German parliamentary building, by the way. "The commies burned down the Reichstag building, and they took poor Martinus van der Lubbe, legally blind and legally insane, blamed it on him, then chopped his head off, and that was the start of the Nazi dictatorship." Now recall that that the West German Supreme Court has now formally instituted the Reichstag verdict as unchallengeable West German law.
Another unchallengeable verdict that it brings to mind, and the connection I'm going to make very briefly before we take a break, is that during the time after the Kennedy assassination Warren Commission report came out, as we talked about during our Guns of November special, and of course there were numerous critics of the Warren Commission report, one of the ways in which the CIA, in an internal security memo, suggested that people defuse criticism of the Warren Commission report was to link criticism of the Warren Commission report as being similar to the attempt to blame the Reichstag fire on the Nazis. In other words, the CIA took the Nazi point of view to defend the Warren Commission report. So what goes around comes around. This is Nip Tuck. For myself and Dave Emery, we'll be back in just about 5 minutes with the third section of Looking Back from 1984, A Hidden History of the Cold War.
And that concludes that installment of Radio Free America program number 2. And this will go into the archives as yet another installment of Radio Free America 37. And I will be developing all of the points. Now note again, liberation going on, being advocated in Germany, first by the Nazi Party in exile and then by Chancellor Adenauer. That liberation involving the quote liberation unquote of territory going all the way up to the Ural Mountains. The political leadership, the civil service, the courts, which you heard referred to in the supposedly new Germany, weren't new at all. And in order to understand how the U.S. lost the Second World War, we will be going into this at greater length in further installments. That concludes the prepared portion of this broadcast. This is Dave Emery thanking all the listeners for their contributions and encouraging them to tune in again to the next broadcast. Until then, take care.